Welcome back. It's another episode of the Elvis Reviews podcast. You've already read the title, so you know that we are talking about a little song you might have heard, an album, a movie. Mm-hmm. It's called Jailhouse Rock. Hello.
Yes. Technically not an album.
EP, yes, an correct, EP. Correct. Obviously, I always say we're not perfect. I've made a mistake in the first thing I've said.
Well, eventually they did, actually. After he died, FTD, Follow That Dream, has put it out as a full album. So you're kind of right.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, we're covering the original six. No, we're covering the original five song
original
EP.
Five tracks plus.
Yes, plus the flip side of Jailhouse Rock, Treat Me Nice.
So it's not even 8 a.m. for me. I've got the coffee. You're... 5 p.m.?
It is 5 o'clock here, and it is like 35 degrees Celsius and about 90. Wow.
So you got the iced coffee. This is usually the way we do it.
Yeah, it's getting really hot here.
So this EP was released October 30th, 1957.
Yeah, but the song, the 45 came out September 4th. See, that's the thing. There was a single, Jailhouse Rock, Treat Me Nice. Then there was the EP that had five songs. And then there's the movie. So,
and then later there was an EP which included Treat Me Nice.
That's right.
So it was a six track eventually.
Eventually.
It's interesting. It keeps us paying attention because there's so many things.
So did you watch the movie?
Yes, I did.
What did you think?
It was a few weeks ago now.
Yeah.
I don't know if I liked it better than the previous one. You said I would definitely like it more because it was better, but I liked the one before.
Okay. Well, that's,
which was...
Yeah, that was lovely.
Yeah. I mean, Jailhouse Rock was fine. It was a good story.
I feel like it captures the sort of rebelliousness that Loving You didn't. Like, Loving You was kind of like, oh, look, he's singing about teddy bears. And then here he's singing about being in prison. It's just a... And he plays such a jerk for most of the movie. He's just riveting to watch.
The way he treats that
Peggy?
The old guy who was his prison mate.
Oh, Hunk.
And he's like, you know, go and walk my dogs and
yeah.
I don't pay you to talk or whatever he says. Yeah. Like, he's not being very nice.
Oh, he's a
and
jerk.
Then he ends up punching him in the throat and almost killing his voice. It's like, okay, that's a story.
That's the other thing.
Spoiler alert. Right. Many decades later, just in case you haven't seen it.
Well, the movie, it has no redemption arc. It's like Elvis goes to prison. He becomes a jerk. He gets out of prison. He is a jerk to everybody. He gets punched in the throat. And that's the end. We assume he's okay now. That amuses me so much, though.
Yeah, the movie seems to end so quickly. Doesn't it end? He was literally lying in the bed in the hospital.
Uh-huh. It's a very
And
abrupt.
I just looked at the timer and it's like, there's like 1 minute to go. And I'm like, it can't just end with him lying in the bed.
Yeah, well, the doctor comes and they get Jerry. Is it Jerry Stoller on piano? Mike Stoller, Jerry Lieber. Stoller on piano to do Young and Beautiful. And that's it just kind of fades out after that.
It just ends, so quickly.
But yeah, I've heard Jailhouse Rock compared to Purple Rain, and I've heard it on, you know, Greatest
As
Rock.
In it's like a semi-autobiographical, massive, boost in their career at that point in their career.
Yeah, but it's also interesting because they both kind of played not great people during the movies.
Yes.
But they're still...
Prince is a bit of a...
Yeah, but they're absolutely riveting.
He's not the nicest person in Purple Rain.
No.
And Elvis, he's a bit of a jerk in this.
Yeah, but there's just something so riveting about... Elvis just has so many great lines in this movie. I love when he's in at that party and they're talking about jazz. And he's just like, lady, I don't know what the hell are you talking about. And just like walks out.
Yes.
I laughed at so many of the scenes in this. And like you said, when he's asking the guy to walk his dogs, he's like, it ain't like I want you to sign my shoes or nothing. He's just such a jerk. And for some reason, it's just so fun to watch. Anyway, I was just curious if you had seen it and what you thought. It is, of course, on the American Film Institute Register of Important Films. And even though King Creole is my favorite, this is probably the most quintessential Elvis 50s movie. Mm. And he never plays a jerk again, honestly, except a little bit in Roustabout. But for the most part, from here on out, he is a nice guy in every movie. And even King Creole, where we'll see. But it's interesting.
Interesting.
And of course, they talk about the Jailhouse Rock dance number being like a highlight of not just his career, but in, all of this genre of movie.
Yeah.
Anyway, I just wanted to...
So this was his... First film for MGM.
Right.
Originally titled The Hard Way.
Then it was changed to Jailhouse Kid.
Right.
And before production began, Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller were commissioned to create the film soundtrack. But they didn't do all the songs. They did some of the songs.
Yeah, they did. Let me take a quick look. I know it's
They might have brought in a couple of other people to include.
Yeah, they did I Want to Be Free, Treat Me Nice, Jailhouse Rock, and Baby I Don't Care. So they did 4 out of 6. Oh, yeah, 4 out of 6. And Lieber and Stoller were like heavily involved in the whole production, and like they were basically co-producing the sessions, and they were giving Elvis music directly. And this is where Colonel Parker gets involved. He doesn't like the fact that Lieber and Stoller have so much influence over Elvis. And you start to see, by the time we get to King Creole, I think they only have two or three songs, and that's it. Nothing else until Little Egypt in the middle of the 60s. But yeah, Parker kind of stepped in and thought they were exerting too much control and influence over Elvis.
Well, not too much, just more than him.
right.
Which to him is too much.
Right. Well, I think they were really like talking to Elvis about a musical that I have all this written down somewhere, but it's a mess to get to. So, but they were really kind of offering him different career advice and suggestions, and it probably would have led to Elvis having a much, much better career in the 60s if he'd have, you know, gotten away from Parker. But
That's the same point we come back to in almost every time we talk. It's like, imagine what would have happened if he actually had some choices and wasn't stuck with Colonel Parker.
Yeah. I don't usually like to just read something on here, but I feel like I want to just read this quick.
Read it.
So this is according to Elvis Presley, A Life in Music, by Ernst Jorgensen, and Pete Gurlnick has also written something in here. Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller couldn't have been less interested when Gene Auberbach suggested they get involved in the Jailhouse Rock movie production. As they waited for Elvis to arrive at Radio Recorders, where Big Mama Thornton had recorded their version of Hound Dog, they were feeling skeptical at best about the whole enterprise. They were sure this country kid would be musically ignorant and too spoiled to do any real work. But when Elvis showed up, the polite Southern boy, whom Mike and Jerry would later label kind of a savant, charmed them immediately. Not only was Elvis a big fan of all the important R&B acts of the past decade, but he could discuss in minute detail the kinds of obscure R&B records that Jerry Lieber and Mike Stoller thought only they'd ever heard. And that's kind of it. Basically, it just says he really hit it off with them. They were really impressed. And, you know, they went on to produce the Coasters and kind of manage them. Basically, you know, they were the brains behind the Coasters. And yeah, I think it could have been like this. This could have been a partnership that endured, where they were like the songwriters for Elvis. But
yeah,
like Colonel Parker kind of prevented that. But anyway, that's all. I didn't realize this was the first time Elvis and Lieber and Stoller had met. For some reason, I thought it had happened earlier. But
well, yeah, I mean, people have put songs in before, but they don't necessarily meet him. We mentioned that not that long ago. There was another songwriter that he met, and then we said, it wasn't usual that he actually met the songwriters.
Yeah, we did. I can't remember who it was.
No. They'd just send songs in, and they'd get used or they wouldn't, and that was the end of it.
Yeah, that might have been Ivory Joe Hunter. I don't remember. But yeah, you're right.
Possibly. So the EP, of course, peaked at number one
on the
newly inaugurated Billboard EP chart.
Yes.
So that chart had just started. It remained there at number one for 28 weeks.
Yeah.
Now that's more than 6 months, which funnily enough, Purple Rain, the soundtrack, was at number one for just over 6 months. So you want to talk about the comparisons right there.
Yeah.
That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. I do think this movie, in the same way that Purple Rain kind of captured that moment, you know, I do think they both really kind of work.
You know, snapshot.
Yeah. Yeah, it really is.
Lightning in a bottle. This is what's happening right now. Film it, get it out. And then you look back at it like, what are we? We're 40 years later now.
Oh, more than.
For Purple Rain. And you're like,
Purple Rain,
it's still pretty good.
I mean,
it's got its issues, like anything when you look back at things from 40 years ago, but it's still a good movie.
Speaking of that, what I meant to mention while we were talking about Loving You was Elizabeth Scott. What a strong female character for a movie in 1956. I mean, she was the driver of almost everything in the movie. Loving You was Elizabeth Scott.
Yeah. Oh, she was great.
Now, have you heard about what happened with the co-star in this movie, the girl who played Peggy?
I'm just about to read that.
Judy Tyler.
So the movie Jailhouse Rock premiered October 17th, 1957 at Lowe's State Theater in Memphis. The female lead, Judy Tyler, had been killed in an automobile accident soon before the film's release.
Yeah.
And a devastated Elvis Presley did not attend the premiere.
And supposedly he's never sat through the entire movie before. He's never watched it. That's what they say.
You just mentioned Elizabeth Scott from Loving You.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I remember correctly, Loving You was her last movie for like 15 or 20 years. And then she did one comeback movie and then retired again.
Yeah.
And now this one dies in a car crash before the movie even comes out. Is there some sort of curse against the female leads in Elvis movies? Because that's usually a theme that people come up with.
Yeah, maybe. In the next movie, he has the same co-star, Dolores Hart, as he had in Loving You. And she goes on to become a nun. She goes like into a convent.
Oh, was that the like guitar playing girl?
Yes. Yes. So, yeah, I don't know. They all get out of show business or go into a convent or die. I'm not sure.
But no, the story of that, a few days after filming Jailhouse Rock, Tyler and her second husband, Gregory Lafayette, began driving home to New York from Hollywood. Man, that's a long drive.
It is.
While driving through Wyoming on July 3rd, 1957, they were involved in an automobile accident on U.S. Route 287 near Rock River. Tyler was killed instantly, aged 24. Wow.
Jeez, yeah.
And Lafayette died the next day. He was 19. Oh. Holy moly.
Yeah. And I really liked her in this movie. I don't know if she was, you know, if she would have had a big career or not, but I did like her and her character.
See, I watched it probably 2 weeks ago, and I can barely remember her, but I remember Elizabeth Scott burnt into my brain. And I've only watched both movies once, but this one, not so much.
Well, I could see that. She's definitely...
I don't know. She just didn't make that much of an impression on me for some reason.
She's not nearly as strong a character as Elizabeth Scott was. She's also, there's a scene, you know, again, you saw it a couple of weeks ago and I saw it, I think, yesterday.
Yeah.
But that scene where he's out of prison, he goes into that diner where he thinks he's going to get a job singing.
Oh, and he jumps up on the
stage. Yeah. And then he breaks the guitar. Yeah. In that scene, I just kept thinking, wow, this woman is incredibly forward, because she's like, why don't take a girl, get a girl off the streets. I'm like, what do you mean by that? You know, I mean, So I don't know. I thought that first scene was really strange with the two of them. But that's,
if anyone was wondering where we get all this information, the internet. Yeah. And you've got books. You got lots of books.
Yeah. Right now, I'm referring to that recording one, mostly the complete recording sessions. But also, I've got Elvis Day by Day, The Definitive Record of His Life and Music by Peter Gorelnick and Ernst Jorgensen again. So, yeah.
See, I love the books.
I do too.
The physical thing. Because that's how we grew up.
Right.
But now everything's on the internet. And I do see the benefit of things being on the internet because, you know, information can be updated. Like there could be multiple things in those books which have now been found to be not exactly true or not accurate. And the internet just updates those things and everything's updated.
Yeah,
but then you've got a book from, you know, printed 30 years ago and it's like, well, it's a great book.
Yeah. I mean, what you're saying is true. It's just that how much can you trust updates on the internet? You know what I mean?
Well, that's the other thing. There's the accuracy of the new information. We're like, well, how do we know that that's correct?
That's the thing. That's what we've lost, I think, with the internet, is facts and non-facts just exist right next to each other.
Alternative facts. That's what we...
Yes, that's popular in this
country. I mean, mostly I just look at general internet, Wikipedia.
Yeah,
and
too.
Again, Wikipedia, when the first few years, it used to be such a... Everybody made a joke about Wikipedia. It's just like everybody just makes up any facts and puts it on there.
Right.
But now it's pretty accurate.
Yeah, it is.
It's a pretty good source. And again, it's not perfect.
Mm-hmm.
But then the other site that I look at a lot is, I think it's elvisinfonet.com. So it's a great site. So shout out to whoever those guys are.
Is that
And there's an Elvis Australia website. There's like an Elvis in Norway website. They're all good. They've all got good information.
Yeah, the Elvis Australian one is the one that I end up referring to a lot. I used to go to one called elvisnews.com, but for some reason they just stopped. Anyway, should we...
Let's go.
Yeah. Oh, you know what? I got to correct something. Last week when we were talking about Lieber and Stoller writing, I mentioned a story of them being locked in a hotel room by... basically at Colonel Parker's urging for them to finish writing a song. And I thought it was the song Santa Claus is Back in Town from the Christmas album. It turns out it's the music that we're about to cover. Apparently they were locked in a hotel room for 4 hours and came out with all four of the songs on this on this soundtrack.
There we go.
Which is
the facts. The actual facts. So let's go into this EP. It's side A. It's track one. It's Jailhouse Rock. Jerry Lieber, Mike Stoller.
Yeah.
Where do you even start? One of his most well-known songs, really.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot.
There are.
But this was like from the early years. I mean, Jailhouse Rock is one of the all-time classics.
Yeah.
Elvis described this sensational song as the hardest he had ever had to record. It's a demanding vocal line as well as being full on for the band. Final release was take six with a splice of take two on the end. Now, the thing with his vocal is the more I listened to it, I realized he's really pushing his voice. I mean, this is young Elvis.
Yes.
I mean, his voice is already high, but his singing is really up there near like the top of his range at that time.
And what's amazing is he still gets that sort of grit into it.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And to do it at that high a register is incredibly hard. I mean, maybe it came easy to him, but yeah, the vocal is incredible.
Well, and that's something that you never really hear about. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, people say Elvis had a great voice, of course. But specifically this song, no, any time I've heard anyone talk about Jailhouse Rock, they've never said, oh, and the vocal, oh, the high mm-hmm. notes he was getting. And just like constant, like all the verses, you know, they're just up there.
Yeah.
I don't hear anybody mention that because it's just... See, this is the thing, I think, in just general popular, you know, culture. He doesn't get the respect for his voice,
right?
I think. I mean, generally, they're like, yeah, Elvis had a good voice. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you look at specific things like this, and it's just like, who today could sing this song that well in that key?
Not anybody.
No one has that voice.
No. I mean, we've heard Prince try to sing it, although he didn't bother learning the lyrics.
Yep. 1993 at the Terminal 2 after show in Munich. I know it. Yes.
But yeah, he didn't get close to...
Unfortunately, we've only got about a minute of the video, but yeah.
But nowhere near.
Rarely played. Actually, no, I think he played at another maybe one or two after shows.
Yeah. It's been covered by a lot of people, although I didn't make a list, but I know lots of people have covered it.
Yeah, it's a good song.
I have the same kind of... thing as you. I mean, it's such an absolute total classic that it's almost hard to pick into it. I mean, it's just, yeah, for what it is, I mean, it's just kind of perfect. And Lieber and Stoller's lyrics, it's so funny. There's stuff on the internet about the lyrics being like queer and all this gay-coded stuff. And it's like, no, this is just Lieber and Stoller writing silly nonsense because that's what Lieber and Stoller did.
But you know what that is? There's just so many people in the 2020s and they've just got their agenda, their narrative. They go back to things from 30, 40, 50, 60, 70 years ago and then just try and apply their agenda to that thing.
Exactly right.
And then go, look, there's the proof. This is...
yeah.
It's like you can make up any story. You can make up anything.
Yeah.
You can twist anything to fit a narrative if you really want to. And a lot of people are just saying stuff for the sake of saying stuff on the internet.
Yeah.
Because that's what they do. You know, I haven't looked into the details of whether what you've just said is true. Mm. And I'm not bothered to do that either.
No.
So that's all I got to say about that.
And that's the thing about this kind of classic rock and roll is the lyrics really don't mean anything. And Lieber and Stoller were incredibly good at writing hip for the time. Well, they were like 24. I think Elvis was maybe 23, 22.
You're forgetting. They're two young guys locked in a hotel room together for 4 hours.
Are you
going to tell me there's no secret story there?
you can make
up any story you want these days.
That's true.
Who knows how they came up with these songs?
I doubt it was like that. But... I'm going to go back to the, the lyrics, that's just Lieber and Stoller, classic lyrics to me, like can't find a partner, use a wooden chair. There's a part where like, there's a couple of people looking to escape and they call off the escape because they're having too much fun at the party. It's such typical Lieber and Stoller fun, hip for the time, and still very cool lyrics.
But see, what you said is just how, you know, as good as some of the lyrics are from the 50s and 60s, a lot of it's just nonsense. It's just rock and roll. There's no big, maybe some songs, sure, but generally there's no big hidden meaning behind some of these songs and the lyrics. It's just like, well, that rhymes.
Right.
Use a wooden chair. Baby, I don't care. That's it. It rhymes. There's nothing more to it.
Yeah.
There's nothing. But then people want to go back and go, oh, it's actually about this. It's like, okay, then.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I like. I mean, Elvis definitely got it. And you know that from all of the times he introduced Hound Dog as being a big, deep, philosophical song. Like he used to do.
That's the joke.
He knew. Yeah, they're silly. They're just fun songs. And the same thing with Jailhouse Rock. But these two guys were masters at these kind of lyrics that are just nonsense, that are fun to sing.
Yeah.
I was going to say those opening two notes with the drum, it's just so iconic to me.
Oh, you know how they do this, like these radio contests, and like they play like the first half a second of a song, and you know, you guess three of them and you win like $10,000.
Yeah.
You could never use this song.
No,
because everybody knows the first second of this song, and they'll just be giving money away every day. It's just so identifiable.
It is.
So recognizable.
What's weird is I was listening to the Adam from the 1980s Adam Ant song called Goody Two Shoes. That song ends on those exact same four notes that Jailhouse Rock starts on. It ends on the ba-na, pop, which is weird. Very cool.
Tribute.
Yes.
Homage.
Let's see. Amazing vocal. I also said that I think that this is what John Lennon was kind of going for when he sang Twist and Shout. And if you listen to his Twist and Shout, I feel like you can hear the influence.
Yeah, like John Lennon did that whole rock and roll album.
Oh, you're talking about later, yeah, in the 70s.
But yeah, like you can tell, even though like later on they're like sort of dismissed Elvis as, you know, he was great in the early days and not so much later.
Right.
But that influence, I think, never left them, because you can still hear it in some songs that John Lennon did later on, and he was still imitating that style because it was just so ingrained in his brain.
Was it his, I think it was his last album, he had that song Starting Over, which is a very Elvis-y, a very Elvis-y vocal.
Thought about that, but that song, oh my god, now that you mention that, I've never noticed, but that is such an Elvis style vocal.
It really, yeah,
it totally whoa, whoa, is. Whoa, 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 whoa. It is. Oh my god, I've never even thought about that. That's exactly how he sings it.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay, there you go. That's it. That's the end of the show. We can't say anything more. That's as good as it's going to get.
I feel like we have to talk about the bass in this song. I don't know if this is the first Elvis song to feature the electric Fender bass, but the bass line in this song is so amazing to me. And I like the piano bits. Yeah, I don't want to waste all our time on Jailhouse Rock, but it's just such an amazing song. I think that's fine.
This is one of the few songs, I mean, there's only not a lot of songs on this EP, but this actually has a solo. Most of the other songs, it's just all about Elvis and the vocal. I mean, it's a pretty basic guitar solo, but it's something.
Yeah.
But we'll get to the other songs later, but yeah, solos are not a thing on this EP, really.
Yeah, you're right. I hadn't really picked up on it that much. I know. Yeah, you're right. You're right. This is one of the few guitar solos.
Because I got about four tracks in and I'm like, there's no solos. There's no solos. And then I listened again and I'm like, okay, well, Jailhouse Rock's got one. Okay.
And Baby I Don't Care has one, but it's not really a guitar solo. It's just kind of bass and drums, I think.
There's a break where a solo would be
right.
In one song I noticed, but again, nothing happens. They just play.
Yeah.
Maybe that's where the vocal was supposed to go and just no one sang it. I don't know.
Yeah.
This song, great piano on this song too, all the way through.
Love the piano bits.
It's good stuff.
This is also the longest track on the EP.
Oh, yeah.
Although I've forgotten to write the the time.
2:30.
Yeah.
Around 2:30, 2:35, depend what you listen to.
That sounds right.
So that's Jailhouse Rock. I mean, insert your own comments. I mean, what else can you say?
Yeah, it is.
Everyone's going to have their own thoughts on this.
Yeah, it's one of the most iconic, classic rock and roll songs there ever
of all time.
Was. Yeah, this is just what else. There's nothing you can say. It's classic.
The next track, or track two on side A, it's Young and Beautiful. Aaron Schroeder and Abner Silver.
Yep.
Just over 2 minutes. I mentioned this before. Young and Beautiful is also a Prince song.
That's right. And I had forgotten that.
But yeah, Abner. I mean, you don't hear anybody called Abner anymore.
No, that's true.
The only one I could think of, I think it was in Bewitched. You remember that like nosy woman, Mrs. Kravitz next door?
Yes, I do.
I'm pretty sure her husband was called Abner because I can hear her voice calling out Abner. The only other time I've ever heard the name Abner.
Yeah.
Wasn't there like Little Abner or something?
That's what I was going to say.
What was
there
that?
Was a 40s comic strip or comic book or something.
Oh, it was a cartoon thing. Okay.
Yeah. I think so. Yeah, a little out
comic.
There.
But yeah, not a common name and not something you hear in 2024, that's for sure.
No.
Maybe we someone's got to bring it back.
Yeah, it's not a bad
thing. If anybody knows any new Abners, please let us know, because that would be very interesting. Mm-hmm. The first few listens to this, especially before I saw the movie, I just thought, oh, it's this real like schmaltzy, you know, ballad. Mm-hmm. It's pretty slow. But then at some point I'd watch the movie, I listened to it a few more times, and I'm like, oh, it's actually not awful. Mm-hmm. There's something in this song that in my brain elevates it from just being this schmaltzy thing. The movie did help. I'm not sure how, but it's fine. I mean, the great vocal from Elvis.
Yeah.
Especially in the bridge where he hits some nice high notes. Backing vocals are nice too. They just sort of fill in everything. It'd be pretty like sparse without the backing vocals, but they don't draw your attention either. They just sit nicely like in the middle and just fill in everything, which is good because some songs, they really do draw your attention. Like, and that's just because they're so good. Mm-hmm. They're well written, they're well sung, and then you find yourself singing the backing vocals instead of the main. But this one, they just sort of sit right there and they do their job perfectly, which is great.
Yeah, I agree.
But that's all I got.
I don't have a lot because I kind of feel the same as you. It's a nice ballad. You know, it's not a lot different than the song Loving You or a song that we're going to cover on called As Long As I Have You or Love Me Tender. It is interesting because I do think every ballad he sings, he improves the vocal, I mean. But yeah, I definitely like the part where he gets to the "So take this heart I offer you," and you know, he gets a little energy at that part. I put that I think this is an example of Elvis breathing a lot more life into the song than the writers were able to really put in there.
Oh, yeah. You can just imagine. We said this about other songs before, but you can just imagine anybody else singing this. It really would just be this boring sugar syrup ballad.
Yeah.
Nowhere near as good as this. I mean, not that I'm saying it's amazing, but he really does bring something to a track which otherwise I wouldn't be bothered listening to.
Yeah. And in the movie, this song really has to do a lot of heavy lifting because, like I said, Elvis, he gets no redemption arc. He just gets punched in the throat and then wakes up and sings this song. And basically we're supposed to infer, oh, he's okay now. He's no longer a jerk. Yeah. I don't know if it managed that.
I love the like finale of the movie is, well, he was being a bit of a dick and now he got punched in the throat.
Exactly.
It's like, what a great movie. I love that that's the end of the movie.
Me too. All the things I love about the movie are shortcomings, sort of, but in the best possible way. This is another song in 1969 in Las Vegas. I think he did, along with Loving You, he did little bits and pieces of it. Like he would pick up the guitar. I definitely remember him singing like the first line, but I don't think he sang more than a line or two.
I did hear something where, he played literally the first few words, the first line, and then he's like, I'm not playing that.
Yeah, he did the same thing with Loving You. Yeah, it's a good, especially when you get later into the 60s and movie songs start to become, you know, less and less good. This becomes better and better. Yeah, I don't have much else. I think it's kind of memorable just because of Elvis's singing. So yeah, it's a little better than a little better than just a song, but also kind of.
I mean, with those backing vocals, there is like this is probably one of the earliest times that he brought in like the deep voice guy.
Yeah.
Do 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 do.
Yeah. There's a lot of that and on here.
That came a lot later, but there wasn't that much of it this early on. And I like that. And there's another song coming later as well, where it's really obvious.
I have notes about that one. Yeah.
So that's it. Now, here's the weird thing. There's only two songs on side A.
Right.
So now we're going to side B. And originally, three tracks on side B. Mm-hmm. But then eventually, which I don't know how that works, but anyway.
Yeah, I don't know why. Well, from a marketing point of view, it does make sense because you have to buy the EP and the single if you want Treat Me Nice.
Oh, yeah. It's all a scale.
Yeah. So technically, yeah, Treat Me Nice is like a rare B-side.
Oh, you want that song? Oh, you've got to buy the other record for that.
So side B.
Side B, track one, I Want to Be Free.
Okay.
Now, technically, a lyric that Prince used. He had a song called Free. He said, I want to be free. There's actually a song, I think, if I'm correct, with Larry Graham also called Free.
Yeah.
And he sings a very similar line, I want to be free.
I have in my notes, I feel like this song could have been a lot more, it could be more gospel. It could lean. Well, I guess I'll go first.
Yeah, yeah. I could see this as a big gospel.
Yeah, one. To me, the song is filler. To me, the song, it suits the movie. He does elevate it, but I'm not, I really never return to this song.
Oh, no way.
Oh, really? You have a different opinion? Yeah, to me, it's not a favorite.
It's Lieber and Stoller for
it
a
is.
Start.
It is writing while locked in a hotel room, wishing they weren't there, probably.
Yes.
That's why they...
We've got to write something to get out of here.
Yeah, because they want to be free, so...
Yeah, exactly. That was literally what they were thinking. I want to get out of this room. I want to be free.
That's my guess. It really is.
Oh, my God, that is so funny. No, I actually really like this song.
Oh, cool.
I love the bridge and the high notes that he hits. He sounds great. And then the chorus, his voice is just wow. The drums are doing this sort of like a marching beat. Not exactly, but it's reminiscent. There's nice backing vocals as well doing the oh yes, that's yeah. I could see this. They could have pushed this more into a gospel track.
Yeah.
And surprising he didn't possibly re-record this for one of the gospel albums later, because it'd fit in pretty well.
It would.
Add some more big backing vocals and stuff.
Yeah. Did you ever see a movie called Brother, Where Art Thou with George Clooney and I don't know who else?
I don't think so.
I've only seen bits and pieces of it, but it had a bunch of gospel music in it, and it was like these prisoners. I think they might have been escaped prisoners, but it had music in it that, again, this with a different arrangement really would have worked for. It even reminds me a little bit of some of that 60s Bob Dylan stuff, because everybody was talking about freedom at the time, and with just some slight rearranging and different music, I think this really could have been a lot more than it is. I like it. I don't really skip it, but it isn't one that I go back to, and it is one that I think of generally as a specific movie song. Like when I hear it, I immediately think Jailhouse Rock, Prisoner Wants to Be Free. Like it doesn't feel as like Baby I Don't Care. Or Jailhouse Rock. Those are just great rock songs. This makes me think of the movie, which isn't a really bad criticism. It's just I don't think it's up to the level as of Jailhouse Rock or...
Oh, no, it's not. It's not on that level. But also, you've seen the movie a fair few times. Listened to this song probably 10 times before I saw the movie.
Oh, okay.
So it doesn't have that this is a movie song sort of thing for me, because I only heard the audio first. And then when I watched the movie, I'm like, oh, that's that song.
Right.
But yeah, if you don't specifically listen to the audio of this... And you've just got your memory of seeing the song in the movie. That's how you're going to think about it.
And I do, especially the very first verse, because, in the movie, Elvis has to do two versions of a bunch of stuff. He has to do the version before he listened to himself in a recording studio, and then he has to do the version where he's using his Elvis voice. And I also felt like this felt, especially the first verse, he sings it more in that, unrefined voice. But then once he gets into the chorus and goes on, it's not like that anymore. So, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting part of the movie when they were in the recording studio. He recorded, a couple songs.
Right. Don't Leave Me Now.
And then he listens back to it and he's like, that sounds awful. Do I really sound like that?
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I thought it sounded fine. It sounded just like an Elvis song. But then he redoes it
and it's
like, well, it's a tiny bit better, but it's not that different from the first one.
I had the same experience.
That I thought.
The biggest difference was the backing vocals. It was like the Jordan Ayers who aren't in the studio, but when he does the second version, that's really what makes it better. But
the first thing I noticed with a bunch of these songs is it's all about Elvis's vocal. It's mixed right up front. And like I said, there's barely any solos on this EP. And most of the music is just, and the backing vocals, it's just background. It's all back there, and Elvis is right in front of your face.
Yes.
Just the way that they've mixed it, which is great.
Yeah, and Lieber and Stoller, I guess, really kind of had a hand in it.
Mm.
They
recognized this guy's all about the voice. That's what we need to focus. That's what it's got to be.
Yeah.
I mean, you can hear piano and guitars and stuff in these songs, but it's never really the focus.
No, and this song especially.
I mean, Jailhouse Rock, you hear the piano a bit, but generally, like these other songs, you just don't pay attention because it's not mixed to draw your attention. The mix is the vocal. It's just so upfront in all these songs, which is, that's why we're here. It's great.
I think what you're saying is exactly why I don't love this. I feel like this song might have the most sparse backing. I mean, not the voices, but like there's just the drum. Like this song feels the most empty. Whereas like Treat Me Nice and Jailhouse Rock have this big full sound, even though it's just a few guys playing. Yeah, I think that's, you hit on exactly what, the song sounds kind of thin to me, I think. And it just, yeah, it just doesn't appeal as much to me.
Like you said, transferring this to more of a gospel song, they would have filled it out more. It would have been great.
Yeah.
But as it is, yeah, it's just a quickly written song in a hotel room, chucked out, just get it done.
By two guys who wanted to be free, yeah.
And not that much thought seemed to be put into it.
Well, yeah, I mean, I look out my window, I see a bird and a tree. It's
that was them. That was them sitting in the hotel room. They looked outside. They saw a bird and a tree.
I know.
And they thought, I want to get out there.
It's not fair of me to say, it's not fair of me to knock the lyrics after I just got through saying the lyrics don't matter. But yeah. I still feel like they thought about the lyrics to this less than they've thought about the lyrics to the other songs.
Oh, it's so funny when you think about half these lyrics are about them being locked in the room and they just want to get out. It's just them. It's so funny to me. Okay, so the next track, track number two on side B, Don't Leave Me Now, movie version, Aaron Schroeder and Ben Wiseman Say.
Right, which we have covered already.
We literally just talked about this on the previous album. There's not a lot of difference between the versions, I think. But the thing that blew my mind, this had over 60 takes.
Mm-hmm.
This is from a thing I read, and this blows my mind that this is even a fact. This has to be the Elvis song that he worked on the most in his whole career. 60 takes. He must have hated this song by the end of those sessions. 60 takes. That's, I mean, probably more than half of them would have been like 30 seconds long and someone stuffed up and they started again. But still, a crazy number.
And is that including the takes from the version on Loving You and then takes, because this was two different recording sessions as well.
I don't know. Good question. Good question. Actually, it probably is a mix of both.
Probably.
Because I can't imagine after he's already recorded it once, then he does another 60 takes.
No, right.
That has to be a mix of both versions.
Yeah, I think.
Over a few different sessions.
It was probably the original. He must not have, he just wasn't happy with the Loving You version. But just like you said, I don't find very much difference at all between this and the other version.
I mean, I didn't do a back-to-back comparison, but it doesn't seem to be a lot of difference. I'm sure there's a few things, if you really listen to it, you'd be like, oh, but that doesn't have the thing.
Yeah.
Maybe. But I don't love this song that much that I have to compare second by second.
Right. I think I have the same thing I had to say on the Loving You soundtrack. I like this song, especially on side two of Loving You. It was a big step up from True Love, and it doesn't matter. But I like the song generally. It's got kind of a bluesy thing in there. It was never released as a single. I don't know why Elvis was so focused on it and getting it right. He must have thought it had potential as a single. And the movie itself must have thought this was a hit single kind of a song, because it was the first single in the movie that Mickey Alba steals from Elvis, his arrangement and stuff.
Oh, yeah.
But it's...
I did forget about that whole part of the movie, how early on they were just like, he'd put a song in and then just someone else would steal it and release it.
Yeah, and then he went and slapped the guy.
That was pretty crazy.
Yeah.
And then he went back to the record guy and just punched him. It was great.
He slapped him, actually. He didn't punch him.
Oh, slapped him, yeah. Oh, good stuff. Good stuff.
Yeah.
See, again, the parts that we love, it's where he's being really not nice.
It really is.
I mean, understandably, you'd want to go back and slap that guy, but still.
Right. But then there's another scene in the movie that, watching it again, I still feel like there's just something missing. There's a scene where he's at home in his hotel room and he's reading some of the fan mail, and then that fades and we cut to Peggy waiting for him at a restaurant, and then he shows up 20 minutes late and she's like, you kept me waiting 20 minutes. Yeah, I fell asleep. Let's eat. And he's like a total jerk.
Yeah.
And it feels like there's a disconnect between those two scenes. But anyway, that's the movie.
Well, yeah, there could have been something cut out or something edited differently that doesn't go together so well.
Or, I mean, I guess he's really just playing a moody jerk in the movie and there's just no reason for it. So,
because, there is no reason. Because he didn't fall asleep that we know of. Everything happens on my terms, on my time. You wait for me.
until I get punched in the throat and then I'm fine.
Yeah, and then everything's, I'm sorry.
So funny.
I think I probably mentioned this when we talked about this song before. My favorite part of this song is the, like those harmonies and the melody when they say, like a book on a shelf.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just this little descending thing. It's not a big, tricky musical thing. It just sounds really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Every time it gets to that bit, I'm just like, oh, that's good. That's a good bit right there.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I do like the song, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The next track is track 3, You're So Square, Baby, I Don't Care. Yes. Lieber and Stoller.
Yes, a classic. Another classic.
Covered a million times by many people. We'll get to that.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the story. I mean, you've probably got this story as well.
Oh, I know which. Yeah. Know
with Bill Black being unable to get the bubbling bass intro correct, he stormed out of the studio. To everyone's surprise, Elvis then picked up the electric bass and played it himself, with Jerry Lieber actually doing the scratch vocal. Interesting.
Right. Yeah.
I'd love to hear the version with Jerry singing it. How good would that be?
I wonder. They've released a lot of that. I mean, maybe not Jerry, but they've released a lot of those sort of demos that people have done for Elvis. So I wonder if it's out there. Like you can buy, like Glenn Campbell, they put out an entire album of Glenn Campbell's demos that he did for Elvis.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to say something else. Because he just put out a duets album recently,
oh, really?
Even though he died some time ago.
Yeah.
And the only reason I know that is because there's a song with Brian Wilson on there, which they recorded.
I knew Glenn Campbell was, you know, part of the Wrecking Crew, and he was one of the studio musicians throughout the 60s. I didn't realize that he was... I mean, I guess he'd get paid a couple of bucks to record a vocal. Like, songwriters would approach him and say, I want to submit this to Elvis. Can you do the vocal for the demo? And so he
had to make it sound better. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause they weren't Glenn Campbell written songs. They were just, he just lent his vocal to it. So those things are floating around out there. So the Lieber and Stoller one might still exist, might even be out. I just haven't heard it.
He's done a lot.
Glenn Campbell is something. Yeah. He was in the Beach Boys very briefly.
Yeah. That's what I was going to say. Yeah. He was when Brian didn't want to do live shows anymore. They got Glenn Campbell in to replace Brian. It's just, like, wow.
They just put the striped shirt on him and that was it.
Yep,
he was one of the
Beach
Boys.
He's got the hair. He'll be fine.
Yeah. Now, Glenn Campbell is somebody I really... I don't have a lot of his stuff, but I'm super impressed with everything I've ever heard him play or sing. Crazy great range. He could hit high notes like... But anyway, it's not the Glenn Campbell podcast.
It's not?
We could do one.
I like the song, but I don't actually like that bass intro and outro. And I'm always the one saying, oh, listen to the bass. I love the bass. Oh, there's a bass bit at 222. I like bass.
Yeah.
But this bass part, it's just so basic, basically. Like,
well,
it's nothing. It's just literally one note, two notes. Just,
yeah.
I mean, maybe it's the feel of it that's cool. I don't know. I don't get it, though. It's, to me, it's one of the most simple things you could possibly play. I have no idea why Bill Black had a problem playing it.
Right.
Because it couldn't be more basic. I don't even understand that.
Yeah.
So when I read that story, I'm like, this guy's a professional session musician. How can he not play such a basic thing? I don't get that at all.
Especially if he was playing bass on Jailhouse Rock, which sounds much more difficult and energetic.
I think it might have just been a timing thing. He might have just been like a straight 4-4 rock and roll guy. Mm-hmm. And this is sort of like an offbeat, just preceding the beat sort of thing. Maybe that's what stuffed him up. I don't know. But Elvis could play it. And he wasn't even really a
bass player.
Guitar player.
Yeah.
But he picked it up and played it. Not a problem. But I don't mind the song itself. It's cool, I guess. But I mean, that bass line. Yeah, I mean, if you're going to feature a bass like that, at least do something interesting. At least have an interesting bass line, not just this one note thing and like, well, that's the big feature. It's like, it's really not.
Well, I wonder.
This is not the feature you think it is.
Yeah. I haven't done enough exploration of this, but I wonder how much. Because they keep saying that the Fender electric bass was new to Bill Black. But I wonder if it was new in general and if maybe this specific kind of bass hadn't really been featured on many songs prior to this. And that's why that sound kind of caught a lot of people's attention at the time.
Because, you can tell it's an electric. It's because it's just got that little bit of distortion.
It does.
Which a normal old acoustic bass does not have.
Yeah.
So
in fact, I think
you can tell it is. There is something.
I think we're going to get to, I think While Elvis is in the Army, one of the albums that comes out that picks up a lot of older stuff has a song called My Baby Left Me. And that starts out with a bass solo, but an upright bass solo. And it's very, very cool. But I don't know if this bass sound was just really, really new at the time. And so even playing something basic was like, whoa, what is that? Not sure. But that's my guess.
I just think it's really funny that he just like threw a tantrum and left.
Yeah. Well, like I said, Bill Black was the one who doesn't, after the 60s or after the 50s, really, Bill Black kind of doesn't come back. Scotty Moore, yeah. DJ, all the same people stick with him all the way to 68, but Bill Black does not stick around.
So I wonder if that was, it could have been a case of he's just not that great a player. It could have been a case of personality clash with Elvis, perhaps.
I think money issues were starting to become a thing. Because now, these guys have been with Elvis for years and years now. Well, years and years.
And they're watching Elvis putting money in the bank, and they're still getting paid the same.
And they're still popping up in the movies. I mean, this is the same band that we saw in Loving You.
Yep.
But I think, yeah, maybe they're not getting paid enough. Bill Black does go on to form Bill Black's Combo, which has some success, I think, in the 60s. No titles I could name at the moment. But yeah, he did go on. Bill Black's Combo was definitely a thing in the 60s. I think they toured Europe. And
do you remember when we were doing, it must have been a 70s album, a very similar situation?
Oh, Duke
Elvis
Bardwell.
Had an argument with a bass player,
yeah.
And the bass player left.
Yes, he hated Duke Bardwell, and nobody knows why. But had his parts overdubbed by another bass player because, yeah, he did not like that guy for some reason.
So the question is, does Elvis not like bass players? Or do bass players have like a chip on their shoulder for some reason and just don't mix well with other people? It's weird that there's these issues over decades with bass players and Elvis.
The Bill Black one, I guess I understand. I have no idea what happened with that 70s guy. But yeah, I can understand Bill Black, especially they started out with Elvis. Bill Black was especially outgoing, like on stage, and I think really brought Elvis kind of out of his shell because he was just goofing off a lot on stage. And to see his part kind of get diminished over time, I think that was getting to him. I think, yeah, that's part of what was under the surface when he said he couldn't play the bass line. Because, yeah, I agree. I think he could have played the bass line probably.
Yeah, he just didn't want to.
Yeah. So I discovered just today all the cover versions of this. I had no idea Queen did this song, Led Zeppelin did this song, Joni Mitchell kind of changed a bunch of the lyrics but also did this song. Buddy Holly, of course, was the most.
Yeah, I listened. I heard the Buddy Holly one, and I heard, I think Cliff Richard did a
version. Oh, I didn't do that one. I had no idea it was so widely covered.
Brian Setzer.
Makes sense.
There's so many covers. But the weird thing is, it's not that great a song. I'm not sure why this song attracts so many people.
Because
it can't be the song itself, because the song's not great. The only thing I can think is it's the lyrics, somehow the sentiment behind the lyrics, because it can't be the song itself, because it's not amazing.
I think it's another one of those songs, and they used to show this on MTV as a video, like surprisingly frequently. Would I like turn on MTV and they would show the video for Baby I Don't Care? I think it's a combination of it just captures, again, Lieber and Stoller were so on it at that point. Like they knew all the hip lingo, and calling somebody square right now is nothing. This was like in the 50s, a new slang that like adults didn't even know what the hell they were talking about. And Lieber and Stoller have lots of that in their songs. I think that's just one of those songs that captures a mood. I mean, it might not even been the real mood there, but it captures this idea of the 50s that people have.
Yeah.
I think it's a classic. I mean, I think it's one of three songs that I think are absolute classics on this album. And we covered Jailhouse Rock already, and the next one is the other one.
So let's go to the next one, which originally was not included on the EP. It was added after everybody had already bought the single, where it was the B-side.
Right, right.
And then they're like, let's add it now. After everyone's already bought the single,
right?
Then they can buy the EP for the second time, just because people like to collect things.
Yes, they do.
The song is Treat Me Nice, Jerry Lieb and Mike Stoller. Mm-hmm. I was almost ready to say, I mean, not technically an album, but was this the first album without that sort of jumpy, jokey voice that Elvis used to sing? And then this track sort of revives it a bit. And I'm like, oh, we almost got through this thing without that sort of song. And it's not as pronounced as some earlier ones, but we've heard, but it's there.
It is.
The weird thing is, my memory of this song is not this version that I listened to.
Oh, from the movie version? Or?
I don't know. But listening to this, it doesn't sound like the version that's in my head.
It's very different.
And I'm not sure how or why.
the movie version doesn't even have a piano. So, and this, and obviously this is mostly piano. So the movie version really is very different than this version.
But the only version I would have heard would have been like the radio version, yeah, which would have been this yes version. But just in my head, it there's so many parts which I listen to here now, and I'm like, I don't remember this part. I don't remember that being there.
Yeah.
All I remember in my head is like the Treat Me Nice part yeah of the chorus and a few bits and pieces, but all the rest of it just isn't in my brain for some reason. I don't know. It's weird.
Yeah.
There's lots of nice piano on this, but again, it's sort of buried with the vocal being the sole priority on this EP, which is fine. I mean, that's what, like I said, that's what we want to hear. We want to hear Elvis's voice. And as much as we love the band and what they do, this is all about the vocal.
Yes.
This song, this EP.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's about all I got. It's just not how I remember the song, which is weird because usually I can, you know, Jailhouse Rock, I can tell you every second of that song. I know how it goes. I know all the parts. But this song just hasn't stuck in my brain the way others have. It's weird. I don't know how.
I can understand that. Well, for me, it's almost the exact opposite because my dad doesn't have a lot of Elvis, or didn't. He's alive, but he doesn't have a lot of Elvis records. But he did have the 45 with Jailhouse Rock and Treat Me Nice on it. And so
you listened to this 8,000 times.
I heard this as a kid, and I immediately preferred Treat Me Nice to Jailhouse Rock. I still, Treat Me Nice is very high on my list. I do love it. I love Elvis's vocal. I like I like when he does the thing you don't like, when he just leans into that sort of husky. Will I walk through the door?
Yeah.
Again, it's a very fun song. It kind of reminds me of Love Me, another Lieber and Stoller one. It's kind of got that same vibe where the singer is speaking directly to a woman. And in Love Me, he's saying, love me, treat me like a fool. And in this one, he's basically saying, when I walk through the door, baby, be polite. You're going to make me sore if you don't treat me right. And that's another slang, by the way. I think I hear a lot in the 50s people talking about getting sore and being sore at somebody, which of course means angry.
Yeah.
You don't hear that anymore, but I hear it a lot in the 50s.
Yeah, there's so many things that you, when you like listening to old music or you're watching old TV shows, and like we grew up and those things were still around, but now they're just, they don't exist.
That's true.
And it's, I don't know if I like it.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff I don't love right now. But let me get back. So yeah, in this song, so I like the percussion in this song, which is almost definitely just Elvis hitting his thighs or his guitar case. I mean, there's drums in the song, but there's also a lot of other.
Yeah, it does sound like maybe the guitar case. Yeah, I can hear that.
I do have, it would have been really, really amazing to hear Elvis do this in the 70s with JD doing the deep voice.
Oh, yes.
But they would have laughed. They would have laughed.
Yep, yeah.
They'd have fallen off the stage laughing. They would have never gotten through it because there's just so much funny deep voice stuff in this song. And yeah, I love that too. I don't even know what he's saying. It sounds like he's saying, pappy, pappy, my pappy, yeah, pappy at some point. The deep voice, I mean, not Elvis. Yeah. He might have been saying baby. That would make more sense, but I swear it sounds like he's saying pappy.
Oh, I just think it's a bunch of nonsense. I don't think there's even any words. It's just yip, 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 yip.
You're right. It's just fun. At 10 seconds in, and then again at like 17 seconds in, there's this great little tiny guitar riff that disappears after the first 20 seconds, but it's just there. Like when Elvis, when I walk through the door, there's a little guitar thing, and then baby, be polite, you're gonna make me sore, and then another little guitar thing, and it's not in the rest of the verses. It's just the first 20 seconds of the song, but it's a really cool, just, I don't know, a cool little riff.
Yeah, why didn't that stay? Why did they?
Well, I think those Jordan, I think all the background voices come in louder after the 20 seconds, and then that just kind of goes away. And you really don't hear guitar hardly at all. Yeah, I just think it's a really fun song. I think Elvis apparently thought that this was going to be a huge hit and was really, like, of all the songs on this soundtrack, he was really most enthusiastic about this song and thought it was going to be a huge hit, he told people. And I think if it wouldn't have been the B-side to Jailhouse Rock, if it would have been, like, on a single with Don't Leave Me Now, or
it would have done better.
I think it would have.
It just got massively overshadowed by Jailhouse Rock.
But yeah, to me, this is one of those like hidden gems that most people don't really know because it was the B-side. But to me, this is one of my favorite 50s performances. I just think it's so much fun to listen to. And gosh, I think
it's
one of my favorites. It's fun.
On this song, that sort of singing is not too much. It's right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Was this recorded specifically for this, for the movie or for the EP?
Yes. It was for the movie. It was one of those songs that Liebert Stoller
wrote. So that's Treat Me Nice. And that's the end of, the 6-track EP, if you managed to get that version, the rare version with 6 tracks.
Right. I think I got mine in 1982.
Yeah, because if you look it up on like Discogs, like 97% of the versions are just the 5-track.
Yeah.
But then there's just a couple of pressings here and there, which included Treat Me Nice, which came out, later. Right. And it's like, oh, they're actually the rare one to include that track.
Right.
But let's go to the outro. It's the conclusion. What can we say about this? So like Love Me Tender, this movie didn't have a full soundtrack album.
Right. But neither did Loving You. Technically, because all of Side B is not from the movie. So,
oh, that's true. Yeah.
We're kind of, until the next movie, King Creole, that's the first full all of Side A, soundtrack. All of Side B soundtrack.
Well, that just makes me think, is King Creole just going to be nonstop songs? Is he going to stop every 3 minutes and sing another song?
I actually feel like there was less singing in King Creole than there was in this movie. Uh-huh. I know that there are less songs, but he does do the songs more than once in this movie. So it kind of feels it felt to me like more songs in Jailhouse Rock, whereas King Creole, there's a lot more plot in King Creole. I mean, Jailhouse Rock, again, the plot, a nice guy goes to jail, turns into a jerk, and then gets hit in the throat. There is no plot, really. So
I love it. I love that. That's the whole story.
I do think King Creole will feel more like it feels more like a movie. It does have more songs, but I don't think it feels as packed in. But honestly, a lot of people choose Jailhouse Rock as the best Elvis movie. In a lot of ways, I think that's true because it really does capture. Oh, I didn't even talk about what Elvis looks like in this movie. I think this is the best Elvis looks from the beginning all the way up until like 1968. I don't think he looks this good. I think he looks incredibly good in Jailhouse Rock. I don't know why. His hair is not like really full of all the gel or whatever was in it in Loving You.
Yeah.
And the same thing in King Creole. It goes back to this sort of wet look. I think his hair looked great in this movie. Yeah, I think this is like really peak Elvis. And I don't know. I think I've talked about this before, but if you've ever seen a movie called True Romance, which was the first Quentin Tarantino script that got produced. So he wrote it, but he didn't direct it. But the opening of that movie is Christian Slater in a bar with Jailhouse Rock on the television behind the bar and him talking to a girl about how good looking Elvis was.
Oh, I can see Christian Slater being an Elvis fan.
Sure. Me too.
I think what you just said about people say Jailhouse Rock is the best Elvis movie. Yes. I think that's partly just name recognition.
Right.
Because Jailhouse Rock, the song, is what sticks in people's head. No non-Elvis fan remembers Loving You.
No, you're right. That's true. Or King Creole.
Even though that could be the better movie, those songs are not anywhere near as well known as Jailhouse Rock is. That's the big song.
And that dance number is incredibly iconic. I mean, I feel like everybody has seen Elvis in the black and white striped shirt. And not to mention, the other thing I forgot, because I've said this on other shows, but of course that whole dance number that Elvis himself choreographed, the whole stage setup with the spiral staircase and the telephone pole, we know Prince definitely got that from right here. I remember when I first saw the video for 1999, and he's up on the second level.
I've never linked that.
Slides down the fireman pole.
That is so similar.
Absolutely the same setup. I mean, even the spiral staircase.
It's got like that second story level. Mm-hmm. It's got the pole to slide down. Oh, wow. Yeah.
Very influential. And that's another reason I think Jailhouse Rock is the best remembered Elvis movie, because this that dance routine.
The iconography.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
A massive hit single definitely helps.
Yeah.
The other annoying thing is this is not color, which you did mention.
Yeah.
When we talked about Loving You, that was in color, and then Jailhouse Rock was not.
I wish it were. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I got no problem watching a black and white movie.
No.
But after watching Loving You, I'm like, wow, it's color. Everything looks great. And then the next movie, we like go backwards in time and it's black and white again. It's like, what? This would have been Colonel Parker going, well, it's going to cost an extra like $2,000 to film it in color. So no thanks.
Maybe.
I'll have that $2,000. Thank you.
Well, Jailhouse Rock did make more money than Loving You. and had finished like 8 or 10 on the like top 10 list of the movies that year, or maybe it was 14. I don't know, but Loving You finished lower. So this made more money. And I don't know if that means it made more money because it was cheaper to make and it worked out that way, or if it literally just made more at the box office overall. Mm. But it was a bigger hit than Loving You, even though it was in black and white. And the next one is also in black and white. But the next one, there's a very legitimate argument could be made for artistically why it's in black and white. Whereas Jailhouse Rock, okay. I feel like Jailhouse Rock could be in color or black and white.
I mean, it does sort of fit, aesthetic. I guess, the idea of the movie. It's mm-hmm. prison. People wear black and white. That's right. How it is.
That's true.
That suits it fine.
Yeah. Like I was going to say, the next one is more of like a, they're going for a real film noir sort of a vibe. So black and white makes sense for King Creole.
Okay.
This one, I mean, I watched it in black and white. I've watched the colorized version of it. I honestly can't say I prefer it. It didn't really jump out at me. I mean, right after Loving You, I guess it is a big step backwards, kind of.
If you had shown me the colorized version and yes. not told me it was colorized, I would have been okay.
Right.
But just having in your head, knowing that it's not real and it was just all added after, that's mm-hmm. not attractive to me.
Right. I understand that.
Like, if you just showed it to me and go, oh, there's color a color version, but they also did a black and white for whatever reason, I'd be like, okay, well, I'll watch the color one. And I would have watched it and I probably wouldn't have known anything.
Right.
But knowing that there's a colorized version and it was just done later, I don't really care about seeing that because I know it's not real. This is just someone else's interpretation of what the colors were. Like, I don't care about that person and what they did. And also, if they spent the money on Loving You to be color and then it didn't make a great amount of money, that's another incentive to go, let's just do black and white for the next one.
Yeah.
Because this might not make much money.
Right.
And then it actually was the much bigger movie and made much more money.
You know, the movie that's in black and white that makes the least sense to me has got to be The Beatles' Hard Day's Night.
Yes.
What the hell? That's 1964? Everything's in color. What? Well, that makes no sense.
Was it in the UK, though? Because Australia and the UK were a bit behind the US.
That could be it. You could be
We weren't right there with America. We were a little, I don't know how far behind, but we weren't right there with you guys.
Loving You was 1956, and that was in color. And then The Beatles' Hard Day's Night
They couldn't have been that many years behind.
Yeah, it was almost 10 years. I mean, I think it was an artistic decision. It's just, once again, it's one that I don't get.
Anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
This movie, this EP, I mean, the songs are good. It's got Jailhouse Rock.
It's classic.
But is that sort of the trend that comes with the later movies? Is like there's one good, really good song and the rest are just sort of movie filler songs?
You know,
Is this the start of that sort of trend?
In my opinion, yeah. We start to get songs that are filler, but there are still, for the most part,
as long as there's one or two good songs, enough to sell the soundtrack, enough to sell the movie, that's all we need. Don't spend any more money on good songs. We only need one or two.
But how many other artists at this point who are not making movies, but when they put out an album, you're lucky to get one or two great songs? I mean, I feel like, to me, that was how it got with Prince. You know, after a certain point, it was like, oh, if there's two good songs, I'm happy. Mm. And same thing really with Paul Simon, Bruce Springsteen, Sting. They're all putting out stuff, but I'm usually lucky if I find, you know, half of the album worth listening to. That's really harsh. But
really, who are we to judge? Who are we to say there's only two good songs on that album? There's two good songs that I like on that album. Right. There's two good songs that were big hit singles from that album, which means a lot of people liked those two songs.
Right.
But they were just the songs that were chosen to be a single. He could have chosen other songs.
True. But yeah, I do feel like when we get into the 60s, if we really do the movie soundtracks, you get to a point where it's like, okay, these two songs are worth the soundtrack. You know, like Harum Scarum, like there's a song called So Close Yet So Far. Great song, stands out. And there's another song called Animal Instinct. And to me, it's like, okay, I got two good songs out of Harum Scarum. I'm satisfied.
That's good enough.
Yeah, unfortunately, the expectations start to go down. But
yeah, I still don't know if I want to do the soundtracks just because I'm going to have to listen to a lot of not great material.
Yeah.
And I think in my brain, it's going to somehow lessen my view of Elvis.
I could
that
I
he
could
did s- such crappy stuff. Mm. So I'm still not 100% that we're going to do the soundtracks. Like, we're okay, because you've said the early ones are good and I'm happy so far. But I just don't know if I want to subject myself to that later material.
I think, especially if we're going album by album, so we're going to do Gold Records Volume 1 next. And then we're going to have Elvis is in the Army. So there's two albums that come out that just pick up like some of the Sun stuff. So those are after that.
And that's fine. And then, King Creole.
King Creole is a good one. And then we get to Elvis Gold Records Volume 2, which is amazing. And then he gets out of the Army. He puts out an incredible album called Elvis is Back. And then G.I. Blues. And that is where it starts.
That's where we fall down the stairs.
Well, if we do G.I. Blues, and if you watch G.I. Blues, it is such a different Elvis than what we've seen up till then. I mean, he's so
I feel disappointed
now.
Already.
Well, it literally, it feels like, oh, this is like sitcom version of Elvis. It's a very, it's such a drastic change from before the Army to after the Army.
At least we've got another good, at least 4 or 5 albums until we get there.
We have quite a few. And the thing is, even after the Army, he was still putting out good studio albums. I mean, he put out an album called Something for Everybody. That's a really good album. Even if we only covered the singles from the 1960s, there's some very good stuff. And Elvis's voice only gets better, especially on ballads.
Yeah.
So, I mean, he continues to grow, even though he's kind of stagnant in a lot of ways in the 60s compared to the Beatles and what else is going on. But, of course, we know the happy ending of 1968. He comes out of it. So
that's it.
Anyway,
well,
that's all.
Well, that's it.
That is it.
That is Jailhouse Rock.
Yes.
Did we do it justice? I mean, it's only an EP. How long can you talk about it?
Yeah. I think, I mean,
and we talked about the movie.
Yeah, and the movie is on the National Register of Historically Significant Movies. And, I mean, it really is a true classic of its type, of this kind of 50s rock and roll era. So, it is an absolute classic. It really is.
Well, there we go.
Yeah.
So we'll be back with the
Gold Records Volume 1.
Gold Records.
Yes, that's going to be a good one. That'll be a great one.
Okay. Well, that's everything. We'll be back next time with another episode. Thank you for listening. It's May.
We're back in June.
We'll be back in June. Oh, if you have any thoughts or corrections, I'm sure there's always corrections, elvisreviewspodcast@gmail.com. And if you get really bored and you've got 18 seconds to spare, go and do a 5-star rating on whatever thing you listen to. Apple, I don't even know all the things. Apple Podcasts. Used to be iTunes. Now it's something else.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Yeah. Send us an email.
And that's it.
Yeah.
Yes.
Thanks, everybody.
Thanks for listening.
Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Elvis has left the building. '58.